I suppose you're aware, we're going to do a little bit of a break from our usual course of study, which is in Tanakh, as we do every year in the period between Purim and Pesach. The Gemara tells us, Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, Sholin V'Dorshin V'Hilchos Achag. And according to many authorities, this is a unique halacha. It actually appears in Masach Tapsachim and Daf Vav, that this is uniquely relevant to Pesach, because Pesach has such an extensive coterie of halachos. That perspective is certainly the dominant perspective. But I'd like to try to begin by adding a little bit of a perspective on that, which is that I think that by Pesach there's another quality, an additional din, as it were, to the principle of Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, Sholin V'Darshin V'Hilchos Achag, which is the notion that what goes on in the context of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim on Leil HaSeder is an extremely ambitious project, especially according to the Rambam, not just Chayav Adam Liros HaSatzmo, but Chayav Adam Laharos HaSatzmo. There's a performative aspect to it, but according to all views of Chayav Adam Liros HaSatzmo, Ki'ilu Hu Yatsa Mimitzrayim, that a person has to conceptualize themselves as if, you know, they had left Egypt. So it takes time to prepare for that. One doesn't just walk into Pesach, forget about the chametz and the matzah and the charoses and all that. And, you know, again, that's enough of a reason. But I'm suggesting in addition to that, there's a different facet, which is the experiential component. This idea, in the concept of experientially preparing ourselves to be able to not just retell, but to relive the experience, is in a way borrowed from the person whose thought we're going to explore over the next three sessions, the Rav, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, whose 30th Yahrzeit will be this Pesach. He said this, not in the conjunction of Pesach, but he said this, became a rather famous comment in the context of the 3 weeks of the Avelos Yeshana, that if you look at the halachos as well as the minhagim of the period of Ben HaMitzarim, especially for Ashkenaz, the Rav noted that, you know, there was this real increase from things that paralleled the Yad Beis Chodesh, at 12 months of mourning for a parent, to a more intensive Avelos of Shloshim, to the Avelos of Shiva. So I'm borrowing that idea and applying it in the context of Pesach as well, that to immerse ourselves in the halachos of Pesach is really an essential means of preparing ourselves to discharge the definitional, singular, also sui generis mitzvah of Pesach night, to re-experience ki'ilu hu yatsa mimitzrayim. Now that we've started with some Divrei Torah based on the Rav's analysis of the Bein HaMitzarim, just a little bit about the Rav. The Rav's distinctive connection with Leil HaSeder, which I'll present from my own point of view, obviously, and then we'll jump right in. So as is known to many here, but I don't want to make too many assumptions, the Rav lived from 1903 to 1993. he was the son of one of the great rabbinic luminaries of the previous generation, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was himself the son of perhaps the leading figure of the preceding generation, Rav Chaim Brisker. And this will become very important in just a moment. The Rav learned, not in any formal setting, the Rav learned with his father. There's a whole story behind that, which is not for now, how he ended up learning with his father. He learned with his father 10-12 hours a day from a very young age until his early 20s, and when he continued to learn with his father but began to take courses at the Free University in Warsaw, and then moved on to take a doctorate in Berlin. The Rav marries there, and he comes to America in December 1932. He was originally supposed to go to Chicago. He had an agreement to go to Chicago, but it was the Depression. They were unable to support their commitment, and he gets rerouted to Boston. In Boston, just making a very long story short, the Rav encounters what he would always term a midbar, really a barren atmosphere in terms of, you know, Judaics and, you know, respect for learning and observance. The Rav, you know, in the early years, even applies to leave Boston to become the chief Ashkenazic Rav of Tel Aviv, a position that for political reasons he didn't get. That too is a kind of a providential matter, because he would go on to reshape quite literally the face of American Jewry. It started in Boston in 1937. Rabbi Soloveitchik founded the Maimonides School, which was really just one of a handful of Jewish day schools in the United States of America. This is a project that he remained involved in for the rest of his life. The Rav's eldest daughter passed away just 2 weeks ago, Dr. Atara Tursky, who carried on his you know, work, was the head of the school committee in Maimonides for 35 years. The Rav's idea was, you know, met with enormous resistance, an un-American thing, bringing the Jews back into the ghetto. What did we come to America for? To go back to the ghetto? Very, very controversial, but the Rav understood the importance of Jewish education, and you know, certainly Dayenu, in the spirit of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that would have been enough of a contribution. He was just getting started. In 1941, his father of Moshe Soloveitchik, who had come from Warsaw to New York to become one of the Rashi Yeshiva at Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, passes away, and the Rav takes his father's place. Though not, you know, it seems all obvious in retrospect, but it wasn't. And between 1941 and December of 1985, over the course of those 44 years, the Rav becomes the unquestioned spokesperson and leading halachic authority of a sector of the Orthodox community that sought to engage with and contribute to society at large while retaining, you know, an authentically halachic commitment. And you know, the stature is something that I think is very, very hard to appreciate today in terms of the towering figure that the Rav was. In Boston New York, the Rav had very important and very close relationships with the other Gedolim who had come from Europe to America. Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was a cousin on his mother's side, and the Rav were very close personally. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, certainly as well. Rav Aaron Cutler. These Gedolim enjoyed a very, very close personal relationship. That being said, you know, there were divergences of views in terms of engagement with the broader world. The Rav's approach was a unique one in terms of, you know, seeing, and this is detailed in some of his works like Confrontation, Lonely Men of Faith, especially those two, of the halachic and spiritual significance of contributing to Yeshuvo Shel Olam, a very, very important, you know, part of his thought. Again, primarily, the Rav should be appreciated as a giant of Torah scholarship. His halachic work, his Talmudic insights, in conjunction with his philosophical work, which was related to that, called The Philosophy of Halacha, which is presented mostly in an essay called The Halachic Mind, how Jewish thought should be formulated on the basis of halachic sources also, which was a major breakthrough idea. But be that as it may, you know, the Rav's work will be studied by anybody who, you know, who's involved in serious learning 100, 500, 1,000 years from now. It is of that quality, and anybody who values learning, irrespective of ideological dint, recognizes that immediately. Now, the Rav touched all areas of learning, but there is a special connection that I'm going to try to explain very briefly between the Rav's you know, intellectual output and creativity and Leil HaSeder Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is something the Rav spoke and wrote about frequently, though I'll put it in my own terms. I mentioned in passing just a moment ago that One of the unique features of the Rav's education, certainly relative to what is conventional today, is that we assume that people who are learned must have studied in yeshiva. The two are almost synonymous in our mind. The Rav certainly taught in yeshiva, as I spoke about. The Rav never learned in yeshiva. The Rav learned with his father. The Rav learned with his grandfather. Learning was a familial enterprise. And this, even though there is now a complex, not just one, of yeshivos brisk in Yerushalayim, in Chicago, in other places, you know, where different members of the family went. But it's important for people to understand that the father-son learning modality was really a hallmark of brisk. Again, it's, you know, not an original idea. The Torah tells us already, Vishinanta Levanecha, and Chazal say, you know, Elu Talmidecha, but the Rambam Paskins, the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah, Bino Kodim Leben Bino, Ben Bino Kodim Leben Chavero. So small wonder that, you know, this family experience of learning, Vigadta Levincha, Bayomahu Leimor, Bavurze, Asa Shamli, Betesi Mitzrayim, the fact that this took on a special role in Brisk is really not an accident, because in a certain sense, it was an apotheosis of their year-round commitment to, you know, familial learning. And, you know, that continued to resonate. So what you have here, and I'm going to try to present it tonight, is you have this incredibly elegant tapestry of intergenerational learning, where so much of the Rav's Torah on, you know, the Haggadah and on the Seder are ideas that he heard and developed from his father and grandfather, and added, like, you know, dimensions to them. If you could imagine, you know, l'mashal, you know, an impressive skyscraper, imagine, like, you know, the first generation, you know, the first 20 floors are built, and then, you know, the next generation, the next 10 floors, and then they decide, you know, to go even higher and further. And it really scaffolds just like that. And it's not an accident. And I think that, again, this is my own observation, but I think that it's no surprise that the Rav attached such significance to the Leil HaSeder, the Vigadta Levincha, really because that was the mode of learning that he experienced not just one night a year, but it was his entire pedagogical experience. In Brisk, there was a credo that the parent-child relationship expresses itself in the context of Limud HaTorah. That's a very powerful idea. That's an idea that was embraced lock, stock, and barrel by Moriv the Rabbi Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, who was, you know, obviously the Rav's son-in-law. And much of what we have in terms of an organized presentation of the Rav's Torah on the Leil HaSeder is actually on account of one of Rav Lichtenstein's sons, who's currently Rosh Yeshiva and Torah Vidas, Rav Yitzi Lichtenstein, who authored the Haggadah called Siach HaGrid, really did a yeoman's job in terms of compiling all of the Torah and presenting in a very, very beautiful way. A lot of tapes, and that's why we called it Siach. It captures sort of the aural nature of the conversation. So what I want to focus on tonight, substantively, are three, you could study them independently, pieces of Torah that relate to the interface between the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim and Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, and to present, you know, how the Rav developed the ideas that he was intellectually and spiritually the heir to from his father and grandfather, and then maybe to try to develop some of our own perspectives about how these ideas interact. So I want to begin with the Mishnah in Masechta Brachos, which got integrated. The Baal Haggadah, the Haggadah was compiled over generations. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Harei ani kiven shivim shana v'lo zachisi shetei amer yitzias Mitzrayim balelos. The kol is an inclusionary term, and that's meant to include the nights. So the Rav began by presenting a simple question, like, what exactly is this doing in the Haggadah? This is a Mishnah, which is about Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, It comes up at the end of the first parak of Masechta Brachos, the first parak in Shas, which deals with Me'emasai Karunas Hashma Be'arvis. We'll talk about the connection to Kriya Shema, but there was, you know, no obvious connection to the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, which we'll learn in a few moments, is really a distinctive mitzvah. So the Rav commented, based on the Nusach HaGadah that we have from the Rambam, much of the Rav's Lamdas was developed based on the Rambam's Nusach HaGadah, that actually it's not Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but Amar Lahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Anybody want to guess who the Lahem is? Anybody happens to remember where exactly in the Haggadah this comes up? The Mishnah regarding Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim directly follows which section? If you have your Maxwell house, you can use it. It's not considered cheating.
Rabbi Azariah and Rabbi, let me see.
You got it. B'nai Brak, right?
B'nai Brak.
Right.
Oh, that was where, not who.
Okay, but good. Right, so Misaprim Sipur Yisias Shem Ko Alayla, Rabbi Osenu, Higiyaz Makriyash Mashal Shachris. So the Rambam apparently held that this was part of the conversation. And as such, even though it's about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Rav noted, according to the Rambam, it was part of their conversation that night, these, you know, great Chachamim who were Eitzel Rabbi Kiva, you know, Bivnei Brak, and that's an idea that I want to come back to. The Rav used to note, in the name of his grandfather, the name of Reb Chaim, that there is a very strange phenomenon in light of this Mishnah, that the Rambam doesn't codify the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, even though it seems to clearly be a mitzvah, I mean, HaTorah, there is a machlokas, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim, whether it applies at night. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is endorsing the view of Ben Zoma that it should apply at night, but be that as it may, it's very striking that nowhere in the Yad HaChazaka, it seems, and certainly not in the Sefer HaMitzvos, does the Rambam codify this mitzvah, you know, d'oraisa. You would expect to find it, let's say, in maybe in, you know, Hilchos Tefillah. It could be the Rambam would reference it in Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah, you know, after, you know, exploring Sipur Yetzias sometime, but it's not found in either of those places, and it's not included in the Sefer HaMitzvos. It's just not enumerated altogether. And that is a very strange phenomenon. Why would the Rambam have omitted this? So the truth of the matter is, if you look carefully at the beginning of Hilchos Kriyat Shema in Perek Aleph, so the Rambam has a unique shita, which is certainly not the unanimous, nor the consensus view, nor even the majority view amongst the Rishonim, that all three parashios of Kriyat Shema are mitzvah min HaTorah. The Rambam says, Kriyat Shalosh parashios al Seder Zeh, the Shema Vayayim Shemoa Vayomer, Hein Hanikrain Kriyat Shema. And the Rambam says clearly that the Kriyat Shema recitation is a mitzvah to do it twice daily. The Ramban counted it actually as two distinct mitzvahs. The Rambam again is citing it as one mitzvah. But that machlokas notwithstanding, the Rambam is telling us that on a daraisa level, this mitzvah of Kriyat Shema, sometimes referred to as Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim, includes all three paragraphs. And that was and remains an anomalous view. Now, the Rambam there, largely based on a Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel, Masechta Brachos, explains what the theme of, you know, the three paragraphs are. So he starts with Shema, the first one. The Mishnah itself wants to know why Shema precedes Vayayim Shemoa. And the Mishnah says, Sheyesh bo yichudo ve'avaso. And the Rambam says, V'talmudo shua ikar hagadol shakol taloi bo. Right, the beautiful line about the importance of Limud HaTorah. So that's going to come first. And then Vayayim Shemoa. Right, sheyesh bo tzivo al sha'ar mitzvos. And then you have Vayomer, which has not a tzivo al sha'ar mitzvos, but at least zechiras sha'ar mitzvos shenemar leman tizkru v'asisa miskal mitzvosai. Right, and then the Rambam says, and you know, you'll ask an important question, which is that, all right, but the mitzvah of tzitzis, which seems to be the vehicle, leman tizkru v'asisa miskal mitzvosai, for remembering all of the mitzvos, that doesn't apply at night. Nonetheless, the Rambam says, and yet it's still a mitzvah to recite this paragraph at night because it references Yitzias Mitzrayim, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzesi Eschem Eretz Yitzrayim Lios Lachem Elokim Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Thus, Reb Chaim explained, as his grandson presented, right, the Rambam did not enumerate the mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim separately in the Sefer HaMitzvos, specifically because he did not feel it was a distinctive, independent mitzvah. It is a din de oraisa. There is a mitzvah min haTorah to reference Yitzias Mitzrayim twice daily, and yet it's not an independent mitzvah. It's part of the mitzvah of Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim. It's integrated within the Kriyashma, Kriyas Shalosh Parshios Elu Al Seder Zeh Hein HaNikra in Kriyashma. And the significance of this is hard to overstate. That is to say, that part of Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim isn't merely a theological, doctrinal, dogmatic statement regarding the unity of God, our love of God, etc. But part of our acceptance of the yoke of heaven is an acknowledgement of divine sovereignty over the world, as is evidenced by Yitzias Mitzrayim, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzesi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So an intrinsic part of our acceptance of the yoke of heaven isn't just, again, an abstract commitment to follow the Ratzon Hashem, the will of God, but an acknowledgement of God's ongoing mastery and sovereignty over the entire world. Yitzias Mitzrayim was an event that demonstrated that God could turn the world on its head. The Ramban himself likes to say that we often think about Shabbos as Zechol Yitzias Mitzrayim. He says Yitzias Mitzrayim is Zechol Shabbos, meaning the fact that God took us out of Egypt is evidence that he created the world. Only the one who wrote the code could hack into it and turn, you know, everything on its head, so to speak. The Ramban doesn't use the language of hacking. But I'm just, you know, 21st century, you know, parallel, paraphrasing. So the idea of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah min haTorah, but it's not an independent, you know, mitzvah. It's part of Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim. Which then brings us to the next point in the Rav's analysis. Again, each of these points can be treated independently, but how exactly would we distill or capture the essential distinction between the daily mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim and the annual mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? So one distinction is already manifest. Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is an independent mitzvah. Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim is a din within a broader construct called Kabbalas Malchus Shamayim. But can we differentiate it further? So, as indicated, the Rav had a very strong tradition on this point from his grandfather, one that he developed further. Reb Chaim, this is actually recorded in the stencils, noted that there were three apparent distinctions, substantively, between Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim, mentioning morning and evening, that God took us out of Egypt and demonstrated sovereignty over the universe in such fashion, and the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. One, the mitzvah of Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim is accomplished through a statement. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hotzesi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, from Sefer Bamidbar, from Perek Tesvav. Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, on the other hand, follows an extensive narrative arc, with the Gemara in Psachim, Kuf Tes Zayin, refers to as Maschil Bignos, Umesayim Bishvach. We start out with the degradation, and then we conclude with praise. Now, there's a machlokas between, depending on the Girsa, but let's say Rav and Shmuel, what exactly that means. One view is, you know, the idea of the national liberation of the Jewish people, Avadim Hayinu Lufara B'Mitzrayim, and then we became Bnei Chor. And the other view is a spiritual reading of that. Interestingly, the Rif, the Rash, and the Rambam Paskin not like one view, but like both views. The Rambam has a unique perspective on this. He thinks that actually the Arami Ovid Avi is a way of combining or synthesizing both of these perspectives. But be that as it may, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, you know, follows a narrative arc. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is a punctuated, direct statement. Distinction number one that was pointed out by Reb Chaim. Secondly, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is a monologue. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is meant to be a Socratic dialogue. There's an idea of trying to trigger, if you read the Gemara in Pesachim, like every other line, is Kadesha Yishalu Atinokos. Why do we have Karpas? Kadesha Yishalu Atinokos. Why do we, you know, Chotfines Amatzos? Kadesha Yishalu Atinokos. And everything to try to stimulate their questions, to try to get them to, you know, obviously if they're, you know, either recalcitrant, they've been burnt out by weeks of, you know, making Seder plates and the like, you know, so the Mechilta tells us, you know, then other family members are going to have to take over. Maybe you'll have to ask the questions, you know, they'll have, you know, manishtana deer in the headlights, but in concept, right, it's supposed to be this, you know, question and answer, this Socratic dialogue. And that's a second distinction. There's a third distinction that Reb Chaim raises, again, based on the Mechilta, v'gad t'levincha b'yom ha'u le'mor. We actually recite this a little bit later on. B'sha'a she'ish matza u'maror munachem lefanecha. That Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim doesn't require any other mitzvos halayla, matza, maror, korban pesach, etc. Whereas Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is multi-dimensional, right, you know, multimodal, in terms of the different, you know, elements which become part of the story. And that was what Reb Chaim, you know, distilled, and that was the tradition that the Rav grew up with. As noted at the beginning, you know, introducing the Rav a little bit, so the Rav added on to that. Right? This is like now the scaffolding, where the Rav said that he thought there was a really, really significant point that had not been raised by Reb Chaim, that in some respects might be the most significant distinction between Sipur and Zechira, and he would point to the text of the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvos as an explicit formulation and other evidence for this. But he argued that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim naturally should culminate in Halel V'Hodah, as we have at the end of the Maggid section. It's the only time of the year that we actually break up the Halel, right? We have the first half of the Halel, then the second half of the Halel. So before we conclude in Maggid, we have the Fichach, Anachlu, Chayavim, Lahodos, Lahalel, Shabeach, Lefayer, etc., etc. Lemisha, Salana, Vavosenu, Eskol, Nisim, Halel, Otsianim, Yavdus, Lecherus, etc., etc. And the Rav explained, it's very, very simple, right? That if a person really is experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim, Chayavadim, Lerusas, Atzmo, Ki'ilu, Hu Yatzami, Mitzrayim, so you don't experience that and then, you know, sort of just say, I guess it's time for Achtza, right? You would, you know, as the Gemara says, you know, in that conversation of Maschel Begnos and Messiah B'Shavach, you know, what should an Eved say upon, you know, being extricated or being emancipated? It says that the Ring Leal asked, you know, a particular Eved, the answer was, you know, Ba'ilo Duyelu Shabuche, that he has to give Shavach V'Hodah, right, on his newfound freedom. So the Rav said that's a critical distinction between Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So again, to summarize the three points, all of which can be treated independently, but I'd like to, as you'll see in a moment, try to make you know, a holistic argument. The Rav started by, you know, wondering, what is a Mishnah that seemingly has nothing to do with Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, but only Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim doing in the Haggadah? And he quoted the Rambam, it's not Amar Reb Lazar ben Azariah, but Amar Lahem Reb Lazar ben Azariah, that Reb Lazar ben Azariah himself thought it was important to integrate into the discussion of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in Bnei Brak. And of course, the question that I want to return to is like, why should that be? Secondly, we talked about the idea that Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is actually, you know, a daily or a twice daily mitzvah. Kol yimei chayacha yamim, kol yimei chayacha halelos. But it's not an independent mitzvah. It's part of our appreciation of Malchus Shamayim, right? Kriya Shalosh Parshios Elu Al Seder Zeh, Hein HaNikra in Kriyat Shema. We don't only twice daily acknowledge divine sovereignty, but we do so in such a way that says, it's not like God created the world and then, you know, like the deists believed, you know, he went on vacation or he decided to, you know, busy himself with other galaxies or whatever it is. He stayed intimately involved and continues to be intimately involved. And that's the idea of integrating Yetzias Mitzrayim into Kabbalah's Malchus Shamayim. That was Reb Chaim's observation. Hence, there was no basis for a separate and distinctive enumeration in the Sefer HaMitzvos. It's not an independent mitzvah. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is part of Kabbalah's Malchus Shamayim. And then, if we want to distill what's the difference between Sipur and Zechira, we would say, you know, it's Reb Chaim's 3 plus the Rav's 1. Maschel Begnosa Messiah B'Shevach, the narrative arc, the Socratic dialogue, Vihigad Tlevincha, and also the multimodal experience, B'Shal Sheish Matzah Mar Munachim Lefanecha, in conjunction with, you know, the Halal. The Rav used to like to bring a proof to this idea that Halal integrates into Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim based on the Shita of the Ran of Rabbeinu Nisim, which, believe it or not, is actually quoted by the the Ramal, the Halacha, do not tell the Chassidim, they'll be very angry about this. But the Ran paskins that the Kriyas HaHalel should be finished by Chatzos, right? Because we know Chatzos is the last time when we have the Afikomen, right? And B'Shah Sheish Matzah Mara Munachim Lefanecha. So it seems like we're tying the Halel into the Zman of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? When the time that you could have the Matzah. It's enough of a, you know, of a restriction for the Chassidim to actually have to, you know, get to Tzafun by Chatzos, you know, to impose this Ran upon them. I don't know, you know, if we could do such things, but what can one say? You know, it's on the books. So that's the sheet of the Ran. The Rav liked that very much. He thought that proved the point that Halal was an integrated part of Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim, in addition to the fact that it was, you know, the bifurcation, the integration of Halal into Makkah. Okay, so those are the Rav's insights. I'd like to try to add maybe two of my own observations to the Rav's, you know, scaffolding of Reb Chaim's assessment. I'd like to suggest the following. Why did Reb Elazar ben Azaria insert a discussion of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim into Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? I mean, you know, he clearly was very excited by this idea. Lo zachisi shetiamer Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, Balelo Sajadarsha Ben Zoma, he was clearly looking for the gushpanka of, you know, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon and the others. But, you know, the question is a very good question, right? Seemingly, it should have nothing to do with Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I should add, you know, to the strength of that question, the Rambam's interpretation in the Parish of Mishnah, I don't know if anybody ever came across this, but I don't even know how the Rambam interprets or any convention of Mishnah. In the Gemara in Brachos, there's an interpretation which is not particularly Maimonidean, that, you know, Reb Elazar ben Azaria, he had to step in under very unusual circumstances to the Nesios, because Rambam Gamliel had to be removed, and they're the second in command had sort of been involved in that whole incident, Reb Yeshua, so he couldn't be appointed. And Reb Elazar ben Azaria was only 18 years old, so the Gemara presented that he grew white hairs in his beard so that he should, you know, look like he had, you know, more gravitas. You know, so it's like some kind of a miracle. The Rambam doesn't like that, so anybody happen to come across the Rambam, the Pirush HaMishnayos here? So the Rambam says in the Pirush HaMishnayos and Brachos, that, which is sort of interesting because he completed it by the time he was 18. So there may be some, you know, Yesh Devarim Ago, a little bit of an autobiographical hint here. He says, no, Reb Elazar, but there was no miracle. But Reb Elazar ben Azaria exerted himself, be'amala shel Torah, so profoundly that his, you know, he experienced premature, you know, graying or whitening of the hair, you know. He was just like, you know, working so hard at it. Which is really interesting insight into his character. In any event, so, you know, here you have Reb Elazar ben Azaria is like so excited to share this massive chiddush that the din of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim applies not just b'yamim, but b'alelos. That was always his intuition, but he never could quite pin it down. You know, Achadarsha ben Zoma kol yimei chayecha. So I'd like to suggest the following, apropos Reb Chaim's insight. If indeed Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim isn't an independent mitzvah, but it's a part of Kabbalah's Malchus Shamayim, I'd like to suggest that on Leil HaSeder, the night when we completely immerse ourselves in the transformative reliving of Exodus itself, it strikes me that Enodome Kabbalah's Malchus Shamayim of Leil HaSeder to Kabbalah's Malchus Shamayim of Kol HaShana Kula. Every day and night of the year, we certainly want to make reference to and take stock of God's mastery of the universe. But there's no question that leaving Sipur aside, even Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim has to take on additional significance on Leil HaSeder. After all, it's the very anniversary of the night when God demonstrated this mastery, and that can't only have an impact in terms of generating a freestanding, independent mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, but most assuredly, it should impact the quality of our Zechira as well. Even the relatively straightforward statement of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim, Lios Lachem Lelokim, takes on new significance in light, you know, of our appreciation of God's dominion, B'chatzos HaLayla Ani Yotzei B'soch Mitzrayim. Hence, in my view, Amr Lahem, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah didn't think it out of place to discuss Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of Sipur, because he felt it was a qualitatively different kiyum of Zechira. And how could it not be? Point number one. Point number two, with respect to the interaction between Sipur and Zechira, I'd like to suggest the following relationship. To be sure, as Reb Chaim notes, Zechira is part and parcel of Kabbalah's Malchus Shamayim, and Sipur is a freestanding obligation. That being said, it strikes me that they don't exist completely independent of one another. And what I mean by that is the following. We started tonight by making the observation that it's possible to suggest that the din of Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, Sholin V'Dorshin Bilchos HaChag, isn't only unique to Pesach in terms of the plethora of halachos that Pesach has over Shavuos, to be sure, and according to many Rishonim, even over Chag HaSukos, but it has to do with the idea of building up. Building up to the experience. You can't just flip a switch and fulfill the din of Chayiv Adam L'Rosh Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatza Mimitzrayim. It would be like trying to mourn for the Beis HaMikdash without building up over the 3 weeks. I'm borrowing the Rav's idea in that respect. And I'd like to suggest something structurally parallel with respect to Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every night of the year, indeed every day of the year as well, Kol Yimei Chayecha, we acknowledge the fact that God demonstrated total mastery over the universe, took us out of Egypt so that we would observe his mitzvos. That creates a platform, if you will, a yesod, a foundation, upon which we can build the additional level of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. If only one night a year we tried somehow, ex nihilo, willy-nilly, to transition from no awareness or recognition of divine mastery to catapulting ourselves 0 to 60 into Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, I think it would be a fool's errand, and maybe that's being generous. But having the nightly experience, indeed daily experience as well, of Sipur of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim lays the foundation for the more ambitious, independent mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Zechira lays a foundation. And so, perhaps, that's part of what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had in mind as well. That the recitation of what seems like an innocuous, almost an appendage to the Kriya Shema, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Be'eretz Yisrael Li'os Lachem Elokim, seems relatively trivial, is far from it, because it establishes an ambient or baseline context, consciousness, that can then qualitatively be expanded into the din of Sipor with all of the additions that Reb Chaim and subsequently the Rav noted, Maschal B'gnosim B'sayim B'shevach, V'gad L'vincha Derech She'ila U'tshuva, B'sha She'ish Matzah U'maror, Munachem L'fanecha, and the Kriya Sahalal as well. All of those, you know, can be better experienced in the context of some kind of an ambient consciousness. And in that way, Zechira very much lays the foundation for Sipur. I don't think that my suggestions are necessarily mutually exclusive. I think both, I hope, both can be true at the same time. That Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim takes on additional importance, additional halachic significance, on the anniversary of God's demonstration of that mastery, on the one hand, and Me'idach Kisa, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, is what creates the substantive foundation upon which Sipur can then soar, you know, into realms never really touched by Zechira itself. So we'll hold it up there for tonight, and again, look forward over the course of the next 2 weeks as well to share, you know, some of the Rav, and again, you know, you can't speak about the Rav without Rav Moshe and Rav Chaim as well. Some of his, you know, very, very, very beautiful insights. Next week, I'd like to talk about some perspectives on Achilas Matzah and that interaction with Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which I think is a really, really critical area. But Erev Tochel Matzos, the other mitzvah saseh of Leil Chamisha Asar, is eating matzah. There are some Rishonim, the Chizkuni, and some Achronim, the Vilna Gaon in particular, who felt at the very least there was a Kiyum Daraisa to eat matzah all the days of Pesach, but the simple view, and the view of the Rambam, is that it's only really required on Leil HaSeder, which is a fascinating idea, by Erev Tochel Matzos, Kizayis of Matzah, which then is Omer Darsheni. It raises and begs the question, what is exactly the interaction between Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Achilas Matzah? We started to touch on that a little bit tonight, in the name of Reb Chaim, that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is only B'shah She'ish Matzah Umara Munachem Lefanecha, but we'll see that the relationship is actually really multi-directional. So I'd like to try to discuss that point a little bit next week in terms of some of the Rav's distinctive observations about the interaction between the mitzvah of matzah and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So God willing, we shall pick it up there, and hopefully this will be useful to all of us in terms of Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, preparing us not only to discharge the obligations, but to live up to the highly ambitious mandate, Chayav Adam L'Rosas Atzmo, Ki'ilu Hu Yatzah Mimitzrayim. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.